When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the editor of the New Books Network. NBN listeners like to read books and buy them. So we thought we'd tell you that right now, our friends at Princeton University Press are having a remarkable site-wide sale. You can get 50% off books, including ebooks and audiobooks, with the code 50, F-I-F-T-Y, at checkout until May 31. You can save some real money on Princeton University Press books. I encourage you to go there and check it out. Welcome to the New Books Network.
So hi, everyone, and welcome back to New Books in Game Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. On this channel, we talk about new and recent publications that deal with digital games as cultural artifacts, the act of playing with them, and the production and social paradigms of the industries behind them. My name is Rudolf Enders, the host of the channel. Before we jump right in, though, I want to let you know that if you like our show, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or the very audio platform of your choice. You're more than welcome to leave feedback or questions on Spotify too. Also, feel free to share this episode with your friends or wherever you might see fit. And now back to the show. Today we have a very exciting guest from Finland with us, Jaakko Stenros, one of the authors of the book The Rule Book, The Building Blocks of Games, published by MIT Press. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Rudolf. So happy to be here. I'm excited.
I wonder if you could begin the interview a bit by telling us a bit about yourself.
So I'm a game scholar at Tampere University in Finland, and I run the master's degree program in game studies there, and research as well. I've been in games since maybe 2006, I would say. And there are two things that I'm sort of looking at: all the weird stuff that I put out over the last 10 years or 20 years almost. There's sort of two strands. One is that I'm really interested in documenting and understanding game cultures. And on this, I've concentrated very much on role-playing games and live-action role-playing games. And then I've always been also interested in trying to understand the foundational concept that we use in game studies. Thinking about what is play, playfulness, game, magic circle, and with this book we've been looking at rules.
Yeah.
So sort of that's my background.
So basically the whole nine yards. Now, of course, we have to check for your Ludo Street credibility. So please tell us, what's your favorite game?
This is completely and utterly impossible and unfair question. I have favorite maybe types of games, but favorite games is very difficult for me to say out. I really love LARPs, and there's certain LARP designers that have created a number of LARPs that we've been really excited about, like Just the Loving and The Future is Straight, House of Craving, Omloop. But these are very difficult to go back to and revisit, since they're often run very few times. Tabletop role-playing is something that I do a few times a month as well. Some of those have been going on for over 20 years. But maybe on the more accessible side, I've been playing a lot of Marvel Snap recently, and Terraforming Mars is always a good time.
Hmm. Now, let's start with the basics then. What's the, talking about Marvel, of course, what's the origin story of your very book?
So we've been working together with Marcus since 2004 in different projects. This is our sixth book together. And like 6 years ago, we started to get the inkling again to write something together. And at this time, we were interested in trying to understand how is it that rules function. Because one thing that I had realized in my research earlier was that I've been looking at different definitions of games from the last 80 years from different scholars. And the one thing that scholars agree when it comes to games is that rules are somehow central to games. And that is where the agreement ends. There's no agreement on what, for example, rules are. So this was one of the starting points. And we started sort of looking at rules. And the closer we looked at them, the less sense they made. So it's one of those things that when you start looking at how people actually play and what are the rules that somehow organize that activity, the messiness becomes unavoidable. And we tried to make some sense from that mess. So that was sort of the starting point for this.
Now, this is actually a very good building a bridge to the next question, because in your book, you discuss the various types of rules that govern different types of games, ranging from explicit statements to social and cultural, more kind of norms. So can you please elaborate on how these different types of rules interact and shape the very gaming experience across, different genres?
So one thing that we do in this book is we look at all kinds of games. So we're looking at everything from soccer to scratch cards and from World of Warcraft to LARPing. So sort of we have a very promiscuous attitude to sort of what counts as games. And we're trying to pull examples from all of these. And our idea was that when you compare not just apples and oranges, but apples and boomerangs, it might be interesting the sort of what comes up. So we look at the rules sort of in from five different angles. There's sort of five big categories that we consider, where the first one is formal rules. And these are the explicit rules that are usually written in a rule book, but we also count anything that is explicitly set out as a rule. So house rules for us are formal rules as well. These are the statements that everybody agrees how sort of we should play by the rules. And this is the most or the least complicated part of rules. Then we talk about internal rules. And these are rules that get us into all kinds of hot water with philosophers, but the idea that you can also have rules that you're just using for yourself while you're playing. So, for example, when you're playing with children, you decide that you're going to let them win, or whenever they're ahead, that you're going to sort of fail at the next thing so that it's more fair the competition. Or you can have internal rules like role playing as a specific type of character. This is what my character would do. These are sort of internal rules that you adopt, and they can be sort of very transformative to the whole play experience as well, even if they're not as explicit or easy to look at. Then we talk about social norms, social rules, sort of the values that guide how we play together. So what is it like to play a board game together? What is it like to sort of be a good, to have a, be a good sportsmanship, to exhibit fair play qualities? And these are things that are less easy to write down as specific commandments. They're norms and values, and they're always a little bit fuzzy. And certainly we can try to write them down, but sometimes that writing down doesn't really help, or it actually turns into something very different when we formalize these rules. So, for example, how long is it okay to ponder your move when you're playing a board game? Sort of how long is that period? Well, we can of course put a timer on it, and like in chess, the chess clock was introduced in the 19th century, but that of course changed the whole game of chess, because sort of it created things like blitz chess and other things as well. Then our fourth category is external regulation, because one thing that also sort of shapes those moments of play that and gameplay that we participate in is the surrounding world. We can talk about the magic circle, but the world around it will affect the game as well. And this can be anything from sort of parental screen time rules, such as you will have to can play for 15 more minutes today, or dinner is in 30 minutes. But it also goes into things like legislation and end user license agreements. So, for example, when you're playing online, you have to, in order to be able to participate, you have to sort of agree to follow the end user's license agreement, which can bring in all kinds of legislations also from different legislative domains, which gets very, very complicated. And then the fifth category is material rules. or they're less like rules than the other categories in the sense that they are sort of rules made physical. So, for example, when you're playing basketball, the ball is constructed to correspond to the basketball rules, so that it's a specific circumference, it has a specific weight, and while you are playing, that physical ball is an embodiment of a rule. And sometimes, of course, we also sort of find surfaces, for example, in the real world, and incorporate these into the game. For example, in the Dakar Rally or bouldering, whereas sometimes we construct like the four different types of surfaces that tennis can be played, so that it's very, very specifically built to certain specifications. And of course, digital games have quite a lot of material rules, since sort of it is a sort of digital conditions that we are playing with it. So these are sort of the four categories through which we try to understand how is it that the game encounter, the gameplay situation is built using different types of rules.
Yeah. You also mentioned that rules inject meaning into gameplay and that they are central to defining the boundaries of possibility within a game. Could you provide for our listeners examples from your research where the interpretation or application of rules significantly impacted the player's experience or outcomes within a game?
Sure, and I think all of the rule categories can do this. Informal rules, for example, there are sometimes the rules require arbitration. So there is a judge who decides or a referee who decides whether something is okay or not. And this happens in sports and esports quite a bit. One classic example comes from ski jumping. I'm from Finland, where sort of all these winter sports are important to us, where sort of Jan Buglöv introduced the V style in ski jumping in the late 80s and was always deducted style points, but he flew the farthest. And over time, sort of the interpretation of the ski jumping rules changed so that it was no longer ugly, but it was understood that this is sort of something that the referees will actually consider as sort of a beautiful jump in addition to getting further. In internal rules, sort of the what would my character do type of internal rule is it will obviously transform those kinds of sort of the meaning of a gaming encounter and say moments. And I think sort of we can find examples from all categories for this. Sort of with external legislation, I mean, obviously, whether something is, for example, legal or not, one game or game move can be legal, for example, in Finland and not in the United States or vice versa. Certain games completely can be illegal. For example, one thing that we talk about in the book is cockfighting. And that is illegal in many countries, whereas there are places where it isn't, which has changed over time. Mm. And similarly, sort of social norms, of course, can roll. I think sort of Cards Against Humanity is one of those interesting ones where sort of the social norms around the situation, depending on what they are, will shift the meaning of the game quite drastically. Yeah. And then, of course, with material rules, one thing that sort of one of our favorite example is that certain games can be played on the International Space Station where there is no gravity, and certain games don't mind. Like you can still play chess without gravity, but basketball, even if you play it exactly according to the rules, it doesn't really work anymore.
Have you been identifying some sort of maybe, or have you come across some sort of maybe sixth rule that would be also a door opener for a follow up to your your next book?
Well, there are some ideas that we're sort of kicking around with Marcus, but at the moment we're still very much excited about rules. And one thing that we realized during this process is that quite a number of game scholars, us included, don't always read the rules. we assume we know how the game works. And then when you go and check the rules, they're actually very, very different. And we feel that there's still a lot to learn about rules just by reading them. One of my favorite examples comes from Yahtzee. Most people know Yahtzee, where you sort of roll the dice and then try to get this poker type hand out of it. And then at the end, somebody wins, somebody comes second, somebody comes third, and so forth. Except that if you actually read the rules, there is no second place. If you just look at the formal rules in Yahtzee, somebody wins and everybody else loses. There is no second place. That is completely and utterly something that game players have introduced. And of course, I mean, it's meaningful, it makes sense, it's understandable, it's very human. But if we were to play exactly according to the rules, second place doesn't exist.
Mm. Well,
so but yeah, there are other sort of foundational concepts of games that I'm still interested in diving into, but deciding where to dive next is difficult. Yeah. But I think rules still hold a lot of interest for me at the moment.
I was just remembering last year we had a one day congress combined with a game jam, and the game jam was completely organized by our students, and then at the end of the day, the students were asking the lecturers to take part in their games, and this had to be because we were filming all this, and this was a very tight schedule. So we were sit at the table and try to suck in all the rules at the minimum amount of time, and I was so completely done because I always had this fear. Oh my God, I don't get it. I don't get it fast enough. I don't know what to do. And this is really this. Well, it was a bit of embarrassment, but I tried to play it cool and put in some theater experience, you know, make believe. Of course, I know the rules. Of course, I know
them. but also sort of in game studies, we're used to thinking that sort of the rules that the game is that the rules almost are the game. I mean, this is a fairly strong point of view to take, but one that some scholars do argue. Whereas sort of my experience of, for example, playing board games is often I don't read the rules first. I want my friends to explain them while we play. So can I even play a game before I know the rules? I mean, obviously, in practice, I can. But from a theoretical point of view, it's more complicated.
Yeah. Well, for my last question, I'd like to zoom out a bit. But this is also, we have scratched upon the surface a bit. Well, how do you see the field of digital game studies today? Can you maybe identify trends or some hot topics like green or eco game studies seems to be very strong at the moment, coming from our beloved colleagues from Klaus on Jafitsik, or maybe you have your thoughts. I'm very excited to hear your thoughts about this.
Yeah, I don't really sort of identify myself as a digital game scholar. I'm more of a game scholar. And I think sort of that's one of the trends that that has been slowly bubbling up over the last 10 years is that it feels that sort of game studies is on the one hand, it's fragmenting. There are more and more sort of very specific areas that where people are looking into very specific questions. But at the same time, it's also less disconnected from other academic fields around it, and partially this has also led to, I mean, it's more connected to media studies and sociology and design studies and whatnot, but also I feel that the connections to other fields that study games are becoming stronger, like board game studies and gambling studies and play studies and sports studies. So that is something that I'm very hopeful that becomes stronger, because sort of I would love to have like an umbrella that brings together all of these different approaches to games that we have in academia. But thinking about sort of specific trends, I would very much say that climate change and eco-criticism is something that is very topical and for a good reason right now. And then it feels to me that sort of also the material game studies is something, or materiality is something that is again being discussed a little bit more. But those are the ones that I would probably pick.
Yeah. And of course, I have to ask this because whenever I have guests from the Nordics, This is where obviously all the people from the rest of Europe, when I talk to them, it's always the golden utopia of game studies, you know, this one place. So it's always, of course, Denmark and Finland and Sweden, where the strongholds of game studies and digital game studies at the same time are. So do you have the feel you is this something you and your colleagues from Finland do reflect upon, that this form of becoming a own academic field of, you know, of institutionalizing, this is something that we don't actually, I don't see in the rest of Europe that strongly, but of course it's stronger with you guys in the north, or so that's my impression at least. So can you confirm this? Can you maybe talk a little bit about this?
Yeah, so in Tampere, we're part of the Center of Excellence in Game Culture Studies that brings together three universities: Tampere University, University of Jyväskylä, and University of Turku. And sort of we've been working together with them for 7 years, and before that we had also two other projects. So we've been working with sort of a shifting group of people that have the same core people for over a decade. And it is something that we talk quite a bit about, sort of how do we see game studies in the future? Do we see it as its own field? Do we see it as sort of a subsidy of something else? What are the approaches that we sort of feel are key and central? And we have noted that it is something that many scholars from further away do want to visit, and we have a lot of visiting scholars constantly, which is wonderful, sort of, I think, for us and for them. So, but it is at the same time, it is weird to be in this center because everything is also so in the air in the current political climate. So we know that sort of for the next few years we're fine, but what happens after that is always up in the air. Academia is much more precarious, I feel, than it was even just 20 years ago. Yeah. So it is something that we reflect quite a bit on, but at the same time it's hard to find the ground that constantly keeps shifting.
Well, Jaakko, this has been very insightful. Thank you very much for being on the show today. And please tell our listeners again, where can we get this book? What's the title of the book? And who is your co-author?
Okay, so me and my co-author Markus Montola wrote The Rulebook, The Building Blocks of Games, from the MIT Press. And it's available online from where books are sold. So Adlibris, Amazon. And also, hopefully, sort of your local booksellers that also need support and love.
So thank you very much. I hope to talk to you again in the future, maybe with the next book or in any conference maybe. For now, take care and goodbye.
Goodbye and thank you.
So, dear listeners, I hope you liked this episode. If you're an author and or an editor in the field of digital game studies or game studies yourself and want to talk about your latest publication, please do not hesitate to contact me under rudolf.indust@googlemail.com. Alternatively, please send me a direct message on social media. You will find me under Rudolf Indust on Facebook and Instagram and under @GameStudies on Blue Sky. And by the way, if you really want to spread your Ludo research love, you can head over to gamestudiesmerch.de and get your nice and fresh Game Studies hoodie. This is all for now. Take care and goodbye.